Welcome to Witchlit, a place to talk about the craft of writing and writing the craft. I'm your host, Victoria Rashke, author, publisher, witch, and nosy Scorpio. Charlotte Wild is the owner of the occult shop Eclectic Charge, co-host of the Cosmic Cauldron podcast, and an article contributor at Pathos Pagan. She is a lifelong student of the occult, but more specifically, a practicing eclectic folk witch whose practice centers around the use of natural materials to create magic and further her connection with divinity. Through her platforms, she teaches awakening or aspiring witches some of the fundamentals of witchcraft by sharing her knowledge gained through both research and rigorous trial and error. In her spare time, you can find her attempting to tackle her to-be-read pile or ticking off travel destinations on her bucket list. She is the author of Eclectic Witchcraft, out in June of 2023. Charlotte Wild, welcome to Witchlit.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. And we, you know, stan a to be read pile here.
So. Yes, the book piles are for real. I've got them everywhere. I think they're foundational at this point.
Yes. So our first question for everyone on the show is, in this age of podcasts and TikTok and YouTube and all that, why write? Why still write books?
Ooh, well, this is actually my first book, my very first, but it did start through teaching through Instagram, which sort of came along, you know, with running my occult shop. And I was teaching in a visual format through my graphics. And there's only so much you can put in that little character cap space underneath an Instagram caption. So I really wanted to take the time and be able to teach someone in a longer format. And that's where the seeds of this book came to be.
Mm-hmm. So did you always want to be a writer, or did this kind of come later for you?
I have always, always wanted to be a writer. So this was a really cool opportunity for me. I typically write for myself. Like I am an avid journaler. I always recommend people to journal. You know, that's just a way for me to process my thoughts. But yeah, writing has always been very central to me and, you know, who I am as a person. Helps me get my thoughts clear.
Yeah. Same. Lifelong journaler. Some phases of my life more regular than others, but yeah, always a journaler.
Yeah.
Do you do morning pages, or how do you approach journaling?
Ooh, I would say I'm actually spastic when it comes to that, because there are times in my life where, you know, I'm more heavily focused on journaling. And it's always fun to go back and reread them, particularly like the younger ones. But it's not a daily practice for me, but I try to at least make it once a week, you know, to where I'm journaling. But, you know, some weeks I have more to say. So,
yeah. Yeah. I think about like reading those, like, especially like journals. I mean, I'm 50 now, like journals from my teenage years and 20s and college and stuff. And the things I was obsessed with that turn out not to really mean very much is always amusing to me as an adult person now.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll go back and I'll cringe a little and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, but it is good to have that insight on where you were at that time in your life. Yeah. I really enjoy, you know, having that window to look back on, you know, back through.
And if we aren't cringing at our younger selves, have we grown? I mean,
right. Exactly. Exactly.
Like, hopefully we get, you know, hopefully there's always some growth there. So there's always going to be some cringe. So taking kind of your teaching to a longer format was the seed for the book. So how did the book actually come about? Like, what was that process like for you getting published?
I already had about half of this book written when I approached Llewellyn with it. Mm-hmm. So I just decided that I wanted to write everything down in a book format and then sort of navigate how am I going to get this published? But the process for me was just, I pretty much holed up in my room for several months, just writing this out. So definitely not a pre-planner when it comes to writing. It was a brain dump and then go back and refine it.
Yeah. So if you took that time, how have you managed to balance writing with like your podcast and other stuff that you do with owning a store and all of that? That's a lot of things to juggle.
Ooh, you know, I wish I had a dedicated system for this, but really, you know, it's taking it as it comes. Like, okay, I've got some orders to get out, or I have to meet with my co-host on this day and get this out. I do have a planner that I try to stick to, but you know, sometimes I go off script there. So,
yeah,
but it's been a journey trying to figure out, you know, how to juggle all of it, but I really enjoyed the entire process.
Well, that's good. I mean, I know for a lot of writers, writing is sometimes really difficult. And I think that's part of the process, but at the heart of it, I mean, it should be something you enjoy doing.
Yes. You have to be passionate about it, because it's a lot of effort and, you know, dedication to really get that, you know, and see it through.
So as we're recording this, the book is not quite out yet. And when people hear it, the book will have been out for a couple months, but, what has that been like as a new author for you, just to kind of ramp up with like PR and, you know, getting ready to do all of that? Do you feel like you had some experience because you've been podcasting, or is this like all new and fresh? And
even though I have my own podcast, it does feel new and fresh, because even with my podcast, you know, that's just me and my best friend. And yeah, you know, we're chatting about witchy and esoteric topics, but it was good. It gave me some practice with public speaking, because that has always been a struggle of mine. And I would say that is probably what took me so long to actually publish a book, was the idea of having to do PR and get comfortable with that.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, there's being a writer is a multifaceted thing. And I think when you're just like in your garret, getting the words on the page, however you do that.
Yeah.
You kind of forget that, oh, this other stuff has to happen to make the book something in the world. And those parts could be really, I mean, like, you know, Llewellyn has a good marketing department. So, but I mean, you're still expected as a writer now to kind of flog the book yourself. I mean, it's not just, oh, I've written it and it goes off into the ethers.
Yeah.
So it's a lot. It's a transition, I think.
It really is. This is my very first interview that I have ever done, with the exception of my own podcast. So, you know, all new experience here, you know, taking it as it comes.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's a good one. And I mean, I think it's, I don't know, it's just always interesting to have a book out and, you know, like once it's out there, it's, you know, I don't know. There's two things I think happen, and other writer friends I have, is like, especially, it's always amazing to get that first copy of your book that's yours. Like that moment is wonderful. But then there's kind of like this weird postpartum depression that comes with the book being out. Have you experienced that at all?
Well, it's not formally out, but I know after I was done writing it, I was like, whew, oh, now what do I do with myself? But I haven't gotten to really experience that other side of it. Like right now where I'm at with it is it's out in a couple weeks from now. So I'm not quite there yet, but I don't know. Like I said, the whole thing's been a learning experience, you know, as I'm going along here. So I'm hoping I get to skip that postpartum depression part. If I can just pass on that one, that'd be great.
Yeah. And I think it's universal. So I will hope that for you too. But I have heard from writers, and I don't experience it like full blown, but it is always that, what do I do now? Do I know how to do another book? Do I still know how to write? Like it's a real weird, that part is a little weird.
Yeah. That part I get, that, you know, thinking about, well, what do I write next? Because, you know, this isn't a one and done for me either. You know, I definitely have found that I have things that I want to share, and I want to do it through this format. So yeah, but that part's kind of fun too, because then I get to play with all those ideas and, you know, see what I can make of them. Mm-hmm.
Did you, like I was reading through the book, and I mean, it is for folks who haven't had the chance to see it yet, or who maybe just picked it up. So it is kind of an intro to witchcraft book. And I love that it's called Eclectic Witchcraft, because, you know, that's why I came to witchcraft in the late 80s, early 90s. And we were all eclectic witches, right? It made me feel at home. But so was, I mean, I know the podcast, kind of your audience for the podcast is really people newly coming to witchcraft, or I think you call them awakening witches, which I like better than baby witch.
Yes.
Although if people want to own that phrase, that's cool too. But baby witch just feels weird to me, I guess. But I know some people don't mind it. Yeah. So, and the book is kind of that same audience. Was that kind of intentional for you? Did you want to kind of have that same, I guess, you know, extend that audience to books, or like, what was the decision to kind of do like an intro book rather than something like more specific or, you know, more in depth on one topic?
Well, for me, I needed to start with an intro book to be able to build on it. And with the podcast, that's sort of the same thought process. Like, this is the starting point. But at the same time, it is sort of difficult to get into those deeper topics if you don't have that foundational information there. So I wanted to have something I could point them to, you know, either the book or the podcast, and this then just sort of build on that. You know, we can go deeper into this. This isn't the end of the journey by any means. It's just the start. So,
And I think, you know, and I think you even mentioned this in the book and one of the chapter intros, that there are a lot of 101 books like out there published every year, but they're all a little different. And I think, you know, it's easy to complain about the embarrassment of riches we have in occult books right now, but I think all of them, and having read a lot of intro books for the podcast and just talking with people, they're all a different door to walk through.
Yeah.
I think. Like, everybody is coming at it from their own perspective. So what, I guess, I don't want to put you on the spot, but what do you think is different? Like, who is your book for? Like, what is different about the door you're opening, I guess? Who do you see wanting to walk through this door or looking for this door?
Well, for me, they are all different, because when you have somebody's book, that's sort of a sneak peek into their own practice, because they're coming from their knowledge and what they've learned and how they approach things. So there's a reason there's so many 101 books, because there's not like a one size fits all practice. And I actually think that is where I tried to separate my 101 book. I want people to know that there isn't this, you know, one size fits all. Mm-hmm. Like I said, you really need to learn the basics and then customize it based on who you are and what feels natural to you. You know, there's this phrase that I say all the time. I can't take credit for it, but it's, you know, take what you need and leave the rest. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the approach that I tried to take when writing this book. And I really do hope that comes through on the page, because I want people to know, yeah, this is my practice, but you can personalize your own. You can make it your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you do a good job of laying that out in the book. And the tone of the book, to me, is very inviting, in that it's like, you know, here's kind of what I have come to on my own. I mean, you talk about, you know, unverified personal gnosis, which I think gets a bad rap sometimes. Like,
it does.
I think the only time it is a negative is when people purport it to be unvarnished truth of the ages. You know, that's the only time I have a problem with it, because, you know, and this has come up multiple times in the show, everything was made up at some point, you know, like everything. Sometimes it was 2000 years ago and sometimes it was yesterday or this morning. But I think you do a good job of that. And, you know, I like that you touch on like the big topics of witchcraft. Like, here's a part about astrology. I'm not going to go really in depth. I'm going to give you the keys you need to approach astrology. And then one of the things that I always appreciate in kind of 101 books and intro books to a topic is you make it really clear this is not where you stop.
Yes.
You have a recommended book list, you have a bibliography, you have all of this for people to kind of take and run with on their new, you know, whatever door they've opened, and now they have this whole world to explore. So I really appreciated that. And I was curious, like, that to me seems like it would be really difficult to make the decisions about which books to include from there. So how did you kind of think about, like, which books to recommend? And
for me, it's my personal favorites. It's the ones that when I read it, like, I really saw something in there that spoke to me. And that is just what I wanted to share, you know, with everybody. I wanted them to know that the books that I love and where you can find more research, because, you know, it depends on the chapter. It was a pretty hefty recommended reading list in there. And I also want people to know that, you know, there's several other books, and, you know, like you said, this isn't the end, you know, this is just sort of the beginning of the journey, and you can find more resources, you know, and even things that I didn't include. And I'm sure I'll look back and think, oh, I should have put that one in there too. But
no book is ever finished. We just abandon it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I'm starting to realize that now.
Yeah. So I'm curious, kind of with this, you know, approaching doors and stuff, what was the door that you walked through into witchcraft? Was it a book? Was it a place?
Oh, I don't know if it was a specific book. Of course, when I got really into it, it was in the mid 90s. So we've got The Craft coming out. We have Hocus Pocus. I think a little later it was Charmed, but of course there was Buffy in there. And it was definitely a media thing for me, to where I at least saw it. But then again, like, I was always that kid making potions in my backyard or with friends, and always really interested in the occult and things that I wasn't supposed to be interested in, I suppose, depending on who you ask. So yeah, I always sort of naturally gravitated towards that.
Yeah. It's always funny to me, because I think there is that, you know, kind of that, there's that millennial Xer access in the 90s. Yep. And like, yep, The Craft is the tipping point.
it really was.
Yeah. It was like, you know, are you a pre-craft 90s witch or a post-craft 90s witch?
Yes. So, yes.
But yeah. And I mean, I think my first books were probably Scott Cunningham and Raymond Buckland books, because that was what was available, yes, like in the early 90s. But I think about what you said in the book, and now about, you know, being the kid, and, you know, I was always making potions in the yard. And we also, my family was obsessed with Time Life books when I was a kid. So yeah, we had like the Time Life Mysteries book, and I was a dedicated watcher of In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy. And again, like, that same kind of occult obsession, even though I didn't really know why yet.
Yeah, it takes a little while for that to come full circle. But, you know, you sort of naturally gravitate towards these things. And I definitely did. But I think I'm a post-craft witch.
No shame in that at all. I think, actually, I interviewed... her name has fallen out of my head. The editor at Llewellyn, the acquisitions editor at Llewellyn, her book on
Heather.
Yes, thank you. Okay. I have a moving brain, and I will claim that, because it's like everything is not where it's supposed to be in my house or my head right now. But I interviewed her about her book about witches in movies in the United States. Yeah. And yeah, that was a pretty fertile time. And I think a lot, you know, that wave of witchcraft being in the public eye is definitely,
yeah,
there's something to that.
And it's rising again. Mm-hmm. Like, it reached upwards in the 90s, and it's coming back again, because I'm hearing from a lot of people, you know, newer and wanting to learn. And it's, yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, I don't quite know. Is it TikTok? Is it the social media? But yeah, I really appreciate that sort of deviation from one mainstream religion to where people are exploring other avenues. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's always a little bit of when there's upheaval, like culturally and socially, it's also a time when people start kind of going, okay, this wasn't working. I need something different.
That's true. We're
definitely in a period of upheaval.
Oh yeah. It hasn't stopped.
No. It's funny. So my son is not quite 30, and we were just talking about, you know, this kind of 90s thing about feeling like there was this break. I mean, granted, a lot of it was, you know, my own white privilege and not realizing other things were going on, but it seemed very hopeful at the time.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is also being young, you know, I was in my early 20s. And now it's just like, everything seems like every day is a disaster at some point.
Yes.
And I'm like, do we just have more access to it? Or is it, you know, are things accelerated? You know, it's a weird place to be in when you're kind of evaluating like where things are. Like, has it always
wondered that
bad?
Myself.
I just wasn't paying attention.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are so many other avenues of communication now with social media and just the sort of constant connection, you know, even having a pocket computer. So
yeah,
it's, you know, you have access to that information all the time. I don't know. I don't know if it was worse or if it is just more notable because it's always present. I don't know.
I think it is one of those like philosophical questions that there are probably many answers to.
Yes.
I think, you know, knowing that you kind of got your start on social media to build your platform, like, what is your relationship with social media now? Like, where are you in your, utilization in relationship to social media?
Social media is a strange animal for me because before starting this page, I don't ever really keep social media. I had a Facebook, but it's almost always deactivated. I had a personal Instagram that I never used. I tried to stay away from it. But now, you know, with my business Instagram page, I'm on it a lot more than I ever was before. But at the same time, it created a community for me. You know, it's not something I was experiencing, you know, in my own personal social medias, but it created a place where I could meet like-minded individuals because I didn't really have that before. And I've actually made a ton of friends just by having this platform, like some of my closest friends. And I'm really thankful for that. Mm-hmm. So I think there's the good and bad sides of social media, but you know, trying to keep an even relationship with it as it is.
So. Yeah, no, I think about that too. And I think one of the episodes of your podcast I listened to, you were talking about TikTok and it kind of, you know, TikTok is skewed very young and like their algorithm is also skewed young. So like, if you don't fit that thing, it's hard to get traction. And, you know, it's, I only have a catch only account on TikTok. I don't post. I just look at stuff. And I'm kind of fascinated with like what strikes it big on TikTok. Like I don't understand the algorithm there. I don't really understand the algorithms anywhere except, you know, their goal is to keep you on that thing rather than you linking out. Like that I think is clear everywhere.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to me, like, I guess how the demographics shift out to different social media platforms. And, you know, especially like Twitter was probably my go-to. And now I'm not there. I still have my accounts, but they're locked and I don't want to participate. So it's been kind of an interesting reassessment of like what I really want to do with this. Like I don't really post personal stuff anymore. It's mostly just business stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. I tried TikTok very briefly, but I was never able to pick up any traction there, but also I didn't like it as much. I didn't feel like I could be as creative because with my Instagram, I actually get I get to make what I would consider art now and get to teach that way. So that was a more fun experience for me. But yeah, TikTok, I don't understand. I do have a teenage daughter, and I did briefly consider asking her to run my TikTok page. I think I might have had better results.
The video format too. And I think there is something different about still images, which I know Instagram has really pushed to Reels as well now too.
Yeah.
But there's something about being able to curate a still image that is very hard to do in a video unless you have like video editing skill. I mean, the skill set is very different for video, I think, than still image.
Yeah, I struggle with video. That's definitely not my area of expertise. So when I am filming, you know, it's just me with my phone in my hand, trying not to shake, you know. Yeah.
Same.
And then just hoping it's okay.
Yeah, and it's funny to watch, like, you know, like the phone manufacturers like add features that clearly are social media specific, like, you know, the anti-shake technology and all that stuff that's coming out. And I'm like, well, yeah, we're just catering to social media in so many ways.
Yes. I don't think my phone has that feature.
Mine does not. I'm not an early adopter. So.
No, I can be kind of resistant. So,
yeah. Well, plus I just like, I don't know. I have this personal hobby horse against planned obsolescence. Like, you know, if I buy a $700 phone, it should last for a really, really, really long time.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. That's like, I think
trading
more than
next year.
Paid for my first car. Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. It's insane how expensive they are. I'm like, hey, yeah. You better last.
Yeah. So I will limp along with it until I can't update it anymore. Usually is the way it goes. So. Yeah. Well, I feel like we went down a little rabbit hole of social media, but I always think it's fascinating because it is part of writing at this point. Like, you have to have some kind of platform to flog your book and to, you know, build followers and get people interested in what you're doing. But on the writing side, like, now that you finish this project and you're thinking about what's next, like, what does pre-writing a book look like for you? Like, what is a good writing day? Like, where are you in that process?
For pre-writing, it is a jumbled mess of notes on the note folder app in my cell phone. So really, really just putting all, I'm like, oh, okay, I could work with that. And then seeing if I have enough to explore there. I don't currently have another book at the forefront of my mind, but I am always on the lookout for new ideas and inspiration. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I've often heard the advice, and I cannot tell you where, like you said, I say it a lot, but I can't tell you where it came from, that you have to write the book you want to see on the shelf, basically.
Yes.
And I think especially in kind of nonfiction space and in our niche of nonfiction, that's kind of the, you know, like what is needed, I think is a good question to ask.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's sort of what I try to focus on. I'm like, what is a topic that hasn't been fully explored here? And so I don't really know what my second book will be, but I do try to keep, you know, my eyes open for inspiration there and try to fill a gap if I come across one, you know?
Yeah. So what are you reading to fill your well right now in between books?
Ooh. Right now I am reading Hester. I've got so many books around here. I am just surrounded by stacks. Hester is the one that I have just started reading. And I do a Book of the Month Club too. So I get a new one every month coming in.
But Hester's the retelling of The Scarlet Letter. Is that right?
Scarlet Letter. Yes. Oh. Yes. And it's been great so far. About a third of the way through it.
Mm-hmm. Are you a multiple
so many
books
in queue behind it?
Are you a multiple books at a time
at the same time?
Or one book at a time person?
It depends. I usually have to dedicate my time to one book, but I can have like one on my e-reader and then one physical copy. Mm-hmm. And it'll depend on where I'm at and what I'm doing. So,
yeah.
No, but I tend to do better if I'm focusing on one story. Otherwise, I can start to blend them together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I usually have like a fiction book going and a nonfiction book going, and then something kind of episodic, like a short story book or poetry. And then there's usually some like reference book I'm in the middle of reading just for fun. So yeah, there's usually four.
Consider that.
Yeah, there's usually like four books.
Reference books too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always have my herbal books and, you know, for my gardening here, I'm in Florida, trying to fight the sun and keep my plants growing and healthy. So I do have a reference book going at all times.
Yeah. As I say, your Florida season, like you guys kind of tap out like around August because it's so hot. Like there's not a lot going on growing in that point.
August is awful. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's not only the heat, but the humidity. Yeah. We definitely tap out around August. At that point, it is sweltering.
Yeah.
The good news is I get to start my garden early because I started it in late March. So I do have a pretty good growing season.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is nice. We're in California in the Bay Area, and I've only been here 2 years and I'm still figuring out like seasons and when things bloom. And I tried to grow stuff at our apartment before we moved into the house, and everything came up great, and then it just got baked into death. Like it was our little apartment balcony turned into an oven, and I was like, oh, I've just murdered all these plants.
So, all these poor little plants. Yeah, I've definitely been guilty of killing several plants by leaving them out under the rays.
We noticed as we were moving, everything was also covered with like soot because we were close to the parking lot. And I was like, oh, we wouldn't have wanted to eat any of those plants anyway.
Oh, no. So. Oh, no. Oh, and you can see it.
Oh. Yeah, no, it was pretty bad. So I was like, okay, well, we're in a little quiet neighborhood. And the rental company also does the landscaping, but they planted it with like our whole front yard is lavender. Because, you know, it's very drought tolerant. So when we saw the house, I was like, this is our house. This is where we're moving.
Absolutely. That would have sold me too.
Yeah.
I'm like this is the one.
Yeah. There's like a lemon tree and a magnolia. And as a Southerner, you know, like the magnolia tree was been murdered. They did the thing where they chopped all the lower limbs off, which I hate when people do that to magnolia trees. But it's very common here for them to do that. They don't let them spread like we do in the South.
So. I have one right out front, and it was my favorite thing when I moved into this place. I was like, I have a magnolia tree.
Yeah.
No, as a Southerner.
Yeah, they're pretty special. I don't know. There's just something about magnolia trees that just make me feel like home. So it was a nice little thing.
Me too.
And, you know, across from a lemon tree, which is very California. So.
Yes. Got the citrus in there.
Yeah. Got to have your citrus tree and, you know, your out of place magnolia. But, and then the property across the street from us is planted with royal palms, which is very weird to me still. Like palm living somewhere. I mean, Florida is more common to see them, but like in Tennessee, we do not really have palm trees.
Well, they're all transplanted here. They're not native to the state, but they are everywhere. Yeah. Everywhere. I have yet to have a yard without a sago palm in it. Mm. So they just come standard.
Yeah. Is that the one that is native to Florida, the sago? I know there's like one like squatty palm that's like native to Florida.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if it's not native at this point, I think it's an honorary plant. So
I joked when the first storm we had in California, the apartment complex we lived in was also planted with royal palms. And it was first time I had in person seen palm trees do that like hurricane blow where they bend and all the fronds are going the same way. And I was joking that I was just waiting for like Jim Cantore to show up on our balcony because it just looked like the only assumption I had with it was like the Weather Channel hurricane coverage.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm in a hurricane area and it's well known that you don't even have to look at the predicted paths. You just have to know Jim Cantore's coordinates. Like that's where the storm is hitting. So. Yeah.
Where is he? Where is Jim? And you need to not be where Jim is.
I think it's time to vacate. It's time to go.
So is there something particularly that you'd like to talk about the book, or like some aspect of the book that you really want to kind of elaborate on or talk about?
Ooh, I mean, as a basic overview, like we said, the book is a 101 book. I wanted to include my own practice in it, but there's also, you know, if particularly for people who follow my page, if what I post on there is of interest to you, this book will be of interest to you as well. I go over candle magic. I go over spell jars. I also go over astrology because that's one of my greatest loves. That's my bread and butter there. And how to incorporate that, you know, into a practice, because, you know, they're not one in the same. It's just mm-hmm. a tool that I use in my practice and for personal growth. Another thing that I really tried to key in on when writing this book was the broom closet sections, because I do understand what it's like not being comfortable, you know, saying, hey, I'm a witch. You know, it can be an uncomfortable conversation. So I wanted to include, you know, in every chapter, a section for people who aren't, you know, aren't comfortable telling others that, you know, they're a practitioner or what have you. I wanted to give them some tips in there of ways that they can incorporate this into their lives without drawing attention to it if they're uncomfortable as well.
Yeah, I did like those sections a lot because I think you're right. And depending on where you are, it's also sometimes a safety issue, you know, and you've got to, if you want to practice, you have to figure out how to do it under the radar. Or I think about, you know, like kids who are still at home that have an interest and their parents wouldn't understand. And I think it's nice to have an option.
Yeah. I'm in the part of Florida that is lower Alabama or the Bible Belt for sure. So I am familiar with not being comfortable, you know, telling any, you know, somebody my beliefs. Mm-hmm. And I found ways around that without, you know, specifically stating, hey, I'm a witch. So I really wanted to keep that in mind as I was writing and remember that part of, you know, myself, and hopefully that'll speak to somebody else as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's nice to see, like, I feel like a lot of books that have come out recently have, I don't know, it just feels like either authors or, I mean, I contribute probably a little bit to Llewellyn's editor and, you know, Weiser's editors as well, of those being the two major occult publishers here in the States, of this kind of weird place we're in. Like, we're not in the middle of the satanic panic, but there's a lot of echoes of that right now. And I think people are being more aware of, like, oh, we kind of had this like phase of the, like, oh, everybody's witches, it's cool. And now there's some tension about that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some restrictions that have come into place that definitely echo that era as well.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Well, and I imagine living in Florida, without like going down the total rabbit trail of politics, is an interesting time to be a Floridian.
This isn't the Florida that I remember. I'm actually a native Floridian. Mm-hmm. I was born here. I've lived here my whole life. It's sad to see where the state is at right now without going down a rabbit hole. It's been a tough time.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah, that could be a whole podcast by itself.
Oh, yeah.
But I was thinking about what you said about astrology in the book, and I thought it was a great overview because astrology is one of those things I have a great interest in, but not a depth of understanding of. Like, I let other people tell me stuff more than I do my own. And the episode of your podcast, one of the episodes of your podcast I listened to recently, just kind of prep for their interview, was the one on planetary days and hours. This is a topic that fascinates me. So, as I recall, because it was in the middle of unpacking, so there's like lots of paper crunching, so there may be things I missed, but it sounded like it wasn't necessarily a new topic to the two of you, but not something that you incorporated in your practice that much at the time. So is that still true, or do you feel like you've, since you kind of looked at it from the podcast, you've incorporated it more?
I have not. I mean, if it, it so I sort of take this approach with my spell work. Can it wait? Or can I time it a little better and layer it with everything that's going on cosmically? And when I do think I need that additional assistance, you know, that sort of cosmic oomph, I will plan it that detail, but it's not the biggest part of my practice. In fact, I would say I do a lot of things on the fly, except for I know what phase the moon is in almost all the time. Like, that information never leaves my brain. So I do have a good like launching point there for when I'm mm-hmm. performing magic. But yeah, the planetary hours and days, no, only if I'm really, really wanting that additional cosmic boost, really, mm-hmm. is when I'll start to apply and layer all my, you know, the cosmic forces as well as my ingredients, and, you know, just to really, really make it. How do I want to say that? My mind going blank again.
It's a moving thing. I'm convinced that when you're in the middle of moving, your brain is like, I don't know, it's supposed to be like one of the most traumatic experiences that people have is moving house.
It is. Yeah. And I have a heavy Virgo influence on my chart, and everything is in boxes and scattered all around me. So yes, my mind is like a mess at this point.
Yeah, it's, I know someone told me one time, we counted up this move. It's like the 35th time I've moved in my life or something. I've moved a lot. And somebody told me a long time ago that like every 5 or 7, I can't remember, moves equals a house fire. Like, that's like the emotional equivalent.
You're increasing your odds? Oh, okay.
Well, no. It's like the emotional equivalent of like a house fire. Like, every time you move, like, because you lose stuff, okay. And, you know, your sense of who you are changes and all that. And I was like, I don't know that that's 100% true. Agree with it. I mean, I think when I was younger, when people would tell me stuff like that, I was like, oh, they must know because they're older than me. And now that I'm older, I'm like, yeah. They don't know. They didn't know anything because I don't know that much.
yeah, that's true. Gives you some perspective now.
Yeah. And you're like, we're all winging it.
So. Yeah. We're all just out here doing our best.
Yeah. But at the time, it seemed like a very, you know, like, I don't know, profound thing to say. And I was like, yeah. Oh. But I do think that the moving thing is stressful and it can make everything kind of weird. So,
yeah. Because you have your home and you have, you know, the spaces where you know things are. And I like to keep my space as tidy as possible because that helps me in general.
Same,
and
same.
It's not like that right now.
I don't have a lot of Virgo in my chart, but my husband and my son are both Virgos.
Oh, well, you're familiar with the energy.
Yeah. Oh, very. Very. Yes.
Yeah. Very particular.
Yeah, they are a little particular, which is, you know, it's kind of good for me. I in my youth, I was a discouraged perfectionist. So I would just like, if it couldn't be perfect, then it just wouldn't happen. And thankfully I got over that.
That's hard to let go of.
Yeah. Right? It's not a healthy mindset. Let's put it that way.
So. No. Yeah. I when writing this book, that was what I had to get over first. Mm. That's why everything was a brain dump, because if I sat there and got caught up in all the little minute details, I was never going to write it. So I had to get everything out on paper, and then I could go back and refine it and go back and, you know, fine tune things and make it make sense, which I do owe a lot to the editors over at Llewellyn for helping me, you know, really make this book the best that it could be. So
yeah. No, a good editor is like the best friend a writer can have. I've said it multiple times, yes. And I will continue to sing it from the rooftops, because it's, you know, the idea, I think it's really easy if you don't really know about writing or publishing to look at a book and just like kind of attribute everything to the genius of the writer. And there's a lot of that in there. I mean, you know, it is largely the work of the writer, but the product you hold in your hand as a book is not a one-person show.
No, that is a team effort. For sure. I really appreciated that outside perspective, you know, and okay, well, this is confusing. You need to refine it here. And this is how it flows best. And it really became something I'm really proud of it, you know, and I definitely owe that to the editors for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, cool. Well, we try to keep it to an hour just because that's about my attention span as a listener.
So yeah, same.
Yeah, I know. When I was looking through your podcast episodes, I was like, oh, they are on the same page.
Yes. We tried for longer and I'm like, I don't think we can't sustain this.
I mean, I think it's, you know, with a conversation, it's easy to make it longer and to do stuff, but it's also like, like if I look at a podcast and it's like 2 hours long, it's like, I don't have time to listen to 2 hours. My brain never goes, you can listen to part of it now and part of it later.
No.
So it's like, I can't do that. I don't have time for that. So I kind of wanted to be that, but in that vein, I wanted to make sure to give you time to like plug all your stuff and kind of tell people where they can find you. And then we'll play our game of chance at the end.
Okay. All right. You can find my Instagram page, and that is at Eclectic Charge. My shop is the same name. So that's www.eclecticcharge.com. And that's where I put all my graphics and goodies on. As far as the book, it is available for pre-order on Amazon, Llewellyn, Barnes & Noble's, Books A Million, and I've seen it on a few other retailer sites as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's on Bookshop too, which I always refer people to if they're online ordering, because they can support local bookshops if they don't have one. Bookshop.org. Yeah, it's a great company. So
really?
Yeah. They it's online only. Yeah. And you do get a little bit of a discount, not as much as Amazon, but you can choose a local bookstore to support and then get a percentage of the sale. So
that is wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. I had never heard of that.
Yep.
Oh, I love
highly
that.
Recommend. Yeah. Yeah. I love them. So
yeah. Always support your local bookshops whenever possible.
Awesome. And the podcast is?
Ooh, and I have a weekly podcast with my co-host and best friend, Jamie Amanda. Our podcast is Cosmic Cauldron Podcast. And you can find that on Spotify, Apple, and really wherever you get your podcast. So,
yeah, I love that phrase, wherever you get your podcast.
Yes, it's catchy and it's been stuck in my brain ever since I heard it. So
yeah, no, it works. It works. Yes. Cool. So the last question for everybody is a little bit of a game of chance. And as a Southerner, you have probably also heard the things you're not supposed to talk about in polite company.
yes.
That, you know, as witches and especially Scorpios, we love to talk about. So I will roll a die. And depending on what number I get, you will get a question about death, sex, religion, politics, or money. And if I roll a six, you get to pick which one you want. And there are no rules to this game. So if I roll a one and you're like, I don't really don't want to talk about death, I'll roll it again. It's, you know, no rules.
That's fair. I like that.
Two, sex.
Ooh, okay.
Are we good?
Yes. Yes.
So your 101 book does not touch on sex magic. I noticed.
No.
Which, no. You know, is you cover a lot, so there's no shame there. But so I was wondering, what would you, especially for awakening witches, new witches, what's the most important thing they need to know about sex magic when they come across it in other texts or anything? What would you say is the most important thing they need to know?
You know, I didn't touch on it in the book, but it is something that I use. I would say like the fundamental part that you need to keep in mind is that it's about energy. It is about building energy. And, you know, just like in other spell work, you can build that energy and focus it outwards, which is how I use it. So, you know, when you think about getting closer to an orgasm, all that attention and energy is being built. And if you can direct that into something, that is really, truly powerful.
Yeah, I agree. I think there is this, we're Americans. So there's a lot of shame around sex. Even if we think we don't have it, we're just swimming in it. You know, like this weird dichotomy of like, we sell everything with sex and we have shame about it. And then, you know, to top that with, you know, newly come into witchcraft, maybe from a tradition that is not sex positive in any way. Like, I think it can be a little fraught, I think, for some people to kind of embrace that. And are there books or places you would recommend people to look at? Or are there things that like you yourself have, like places you've looked for information or things that you would want to share with new witches?
You know, I just recently got a sex magic book that I haven't had the opportunity to read, but I've been thumbing through by Gabby Hurstick. Did I say that right? I hope I did. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed looking through that. Like I said, I haven't read it all the way through. It's been a hectic time here recently, but we did do a podcast episode on this. I don't remember exactly when, but we were able to explore that topic in a wider format than right here. Mm-hmm. Although when I was recording it, I was like, how many times am I going to say orgasm this entire podcast?
A little counter in the corner of your...
Yeah.
But I agree. I mean, I think it is powerful, and, you know, it's powerful by yourself or with a partner or however you do sex.
Ooh, I didn't mention that. Yeah. You don't need a partner. That's probably one of the key components there. You don't have to, you know, it doesn't have to be a team sport. You can go at it on your own.
Yeah. I like that. I think it's just, you know, there's, you know, areas of practice that either have, I don't know. To say, oh, I'm going to become a witch doesn't mean you don't have your baggage that you're bringing with you, right? I mean, that's part of the shadow work, which you do touch on in the book too, which I really appreciated. That, you know, part of it is growing as a person too.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most fundamental parts of it is witchcraft, but spirituality as a whole, and, you know, using it as a tool for self-improvement. You know, it's not just all spell work. It's a lot of, you know, getting your mind in the right place and learning how to direct your energy and learning about yourself. You know, I think that's pretty vital.
Yeah. No, I would agree. Awesome. I think that's a good note to wrap on. So, but thank you so much, Charlotte, for being on. This has been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed talking with you and as a fellow podcaster and fellow writer. So.
Yes, I really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for having me on.
Witchlit is a production of Thousand Volt Press and is edited by Julian Rashke. Our intro music is Cosmic Glow by Andrew Kay, and our outro music is Voices by Alexander Shinekar. Transcripts and all our previous episodes are available at witchlitpod.com, and you can follow us on Instagram at witchlitpod. Please help other witches find us by leaving a rating or review wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening to and reading Witchlit.